the risk of heart disease, diabetes, and inflammatory illnesses. Saturated fat, cholesterol, and trans fat also interfere with conversion to DHA. Among the most beneficial effects of a diet rich in plant foods are the low level of saturated fat and trans fat, harmful fats, and the relatively high level of essential fatty acids, beneficial fats. Both meat-based diets and vegetarian diets can be deficient in these healthy fats if they do not contain sufficient green leaves, beans, nuts, seeds, or fish. So, eat less of the fatty foods you usually consume and eat more walnuts, flax seeds, soybeans, and leafy green vegetables. The Fat Dictionary. All fats are equally fattening, containing 9 calories per gram, compared with 4 calories per gram for carbohydrates and protein. Arachidonic acid is a long-chain omega-6 fat produced by the body, but it is also found in meat, fowl, dairy, and eggs. Products made with excessive amounts of this fatty acid have the potential to increase inflammation and are disease-causing. They may increase high blood pressure, thrombosis, vasospasm, and allergic reaction. They are linked to arthritis, depression, and other common illnesses. Cholesterol is a waxy fat produced by the body and found in animal foods such as meat, fowl, dairy, and eggs. Eating cholesterol raises blood cholesterol, but not as much as eating saturated fats and trans fats. The amount of cholesterol in plants is so negligible that you should consider them cholesterol-free. DHA fat is a long-chain omega-3 fat that is made by the body, but it can also be found in fish such as salmon and sardines. DHA is used in the production of anti-inflammatory mediators that inhibit abnormal immune function and prevent excessive blood clotting. DHA is not considered an essential fat because the body can manufacture sufficient amounts if adequate short-chain omega-3 fats, including flax seeds, walnuts, soybeans, leafy green vegetables, are consumed. However, because of genetic differences in the enzyme activity and because of excess omega-6 fats, many people who do not consume fatty fish regularly are deficient in this important fat. Hydrogenated fat. Hydrogenation is a process of adding hydrogen molecules to unsaturated fats, thereby turning these oils, which are liquid at room temperature, into harder, more saturated fats such as margarine. Hardening the fat extends its shelf life, so the oil can be used over and over again to fry potatoes in a fast food restaurant or be added to processed foods such as crackers and cookies. While hydrogenation does not make the fat completely saturated, it creates trans fatty acids, which act like saturated fats. Evidence is accumulating to implicate the harmful nature of these man-made fats in both cancer and heart disease. Avoid all foods whose ingredients contain partially hydrogenated or hydrogenated oils. Monounsaturated fat. These fats have only one double bond in their carbon chain. They are liquid at room temperature and thought to have health benefits. The supposed health benefits of these fats appear when they are used in place of dangerous saturated fats. But even polyunsaturated oils will lower cholesterol if used in place of saturated fat. Monounsaturated fat is found in avocados, almonds, peanuts, and most other nuts and seeds. Keep in mind that no isolated or refined fat, even these monounsaturated fats, should be considered health food. Oils with the highest percentage of monounsaturated fat include olive, canola, and peanut oils. Polyunsaturated fat. These fatty acids have more than one double bond in their chain. These fats include corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, and sunflower oil. They are soft at room temperature. These fats promote the growth of cancer in lab animals more than olive oil, a monounsaturated fat, does. Saturated fat. Some naturally occurring fats are called saturated because of all of the bonds in their carbon chain are single bonds. These fats are solid at room temperature and are generally recognized as a significant cause of both heart disease and cancer. Saturated fats are found mainly in meat, fowl, eggs, and dairy. Coconut and palm oil are largely saturated and are not desirable. The foods with the most saturated fat are butter, cream, and cheese. Last in the dictionary of fats, unsaturated fat. These fats are a mix of monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. Eating unsaturated fats lowers cholesterol when substituted for saturated fats, but excessive amounts may promote cancer. There's something fishy about fish oils. Most of the publicity about the beneficial effects of essential fats has focused on fish oils, which are rich in EPA and omega-3 fat. One problem with fish oils is that much of the fat has already turned rancid. If you cut open a capsule of fish oil and taste it, you will find it tastes like gasoline. Not only are many people intolerant of the burping, indigestion, and smelling like a fish, but it is also possible that the rancidity of the fat places a stress on the liver. I have noted abnormal liver function in the blood tests of a few patients who were taking fish oil capsules. These few patients had their liver function return to normal when they stopped taking the fish oil. Recently, a lawsuit brought by environmentalists in California against 8 supplement manufacturers or distributors claimed that popular brands of fish oil supplements contain unsafe and illegal levels of polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, which are carcinogenic chemicals. Testing found that levels of PCBs in popular fish oil supplements varied wildly from about 12 nanograms per recommended dose to more than 850 nanograms in the most contaminated product. The suit claimed that the manufacturers were in violation of California law for not disclosing any non-zero PCB levels in their products. Large amounts of fish oils inhibit immune function. Lowering the function of natural killer cells is not a good thing, as our defenses against infection and cancer diminish. Because of this immune suppression, as well as the toxicity issues, I do not routinely recommend that my patients take fish oil capsules, though there are a few exceptions. This ability of fish oil to decrease the activity of the immune system makes them useful for some patients with autoimmune illnesses, such as rheumatoid arthritis or inflammatory bowel disease. Some rheumatoid arthritis patients are, quote, fish oil responsive, end quote, and many others are not. I often perform a 3-month trial of fish oil supplementation to determine a patient's responsiveness. With such patients, the risks of the added oil are minimal compared with the potential benefits, especially if they can avoid toxic drugs. Of course, when using fish oil supplements, consider only the highly purified types, free of PCBs and mercury. Another case in which fish oils may be useful is the individual who does not convert omega-3 fats into DHA sufficiently. These people may be more prone to depression, allergies, and inflammatory skin disease, such as eczema. There are blood tests available for a physician to analyze the fatty acid balance on red blood cell membranes and thereby determine a deficiency of DHA or omega-3 fat. These people often benefit from the addition of fish oils or plant-derived DHA. Laboratory cultivated DHA made from microalgae is a pure form of DHA without mercury or other toxins. It is well tolerated and does not have a rancid taste or odor. Does fish prevent heart disease? There are 2 components to a heart attack or stroke. First, you must develop atherosclerotic plaque. This plaque builds up over many years from eating a diet deficient in unrefined plant foods. Almost all Americans have such plaque. Autopsy studies demonstrate atherosclerosis even in the vast majority of American children. Once this fatty plaque accumulates and partially blocks a coronary artery, a clot can develop in a defect or crack in the surface of the plaque. This clot is called a thrombus, which can enlarge and completely block the vessel, causing a heart attack, or break off and travel upstream, obstructing a more distal coronary site. A traveling thrombus is called an embolus. Emboli and thrombi are the causes of almost all heart attacks and strokes. Fish contains omega-3 fatty acids, EPA and DHA, that interfere with blood clotting much the same way aspirin does. Once you have significant atherosclerosis, it is helpful to take such anti-clotting agents, especially if you continue a dangerous diet. These fish-derived fats also have some effect on protecting the arterial walls from damage from other fats. For people eating saturated fat containing animal products, it is advisable to consume one or two weekly portions of fatty fish, such as sardines, salmon, trout, halibut, or mackerel, and reduce the consumption of other animal products accordingly. Increasing fish intake beyond one or two servings per week has not been shown to offer additional protection. However, the best way to prevent a heart attack or stroke is to follow a high-nutrient diet with little or no animal products, thereby ensuring that such blockages don't develop in the first place. Then eating fish won't matter. It is true that increasing blood levels of these important fish-derived fats reduces the incidence of heart attacks significantly. However, contrary to popular belief, not only vegetarians but also most others eating diets with adequate plant material get most of their long-chain omega-3 fatty acids from non-fish sources. In fact, the reason the fish-derived fats, EPA and DHA, are not considered essential fats is that almost all people have enzymes to convert the plant-derived omega-3 fat rapidly into EPA and DHA. Fish is a double-edged sword, especially because fish has been shown to increase heart attack risk if it is polluted with mercury. Keep in mind that even though men in Finland consumed lots of fish, their mortality from coronary heart disease is one of the highest in the world. It seems that the cardioprotective effects of eating a little fish is lost when you eat lots of fish, most likely because lots of fish exposes you to high mercury levels, which can promote lipid peroxidation. Lipid peroxidation occurs when body lipids react with oxygen to cause a compound that plays a major role in the development of diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, and arthritis. In addition, those who consume fish in the hope of reducing their cardiac risk may be getting more than they bargained for, namely, toxic contaminants, including some that carry a cancer risk. Fish is one of the most polluted foods we eat, and it may place consumers at high risk for various cancers. Scientists have linked tumors in fish directly to the pollutants ingested along the aquatic food chain, a finding confirmed by the National Marine Fisheries Service Laboratory. In some instances, such as with the PCBs in the Great Lakes trout and salmon, it can be shown that a person would have to drink the lake water for 100 years to accumulate the same quantity of PCBs present in a single half-pound portion of these fish, reported John J. Black, PhD, senior cancer research scientist for the Roswell Park Memorial Institute, to the American Cancer Society. From the flounder in Boston Harbor to English sole in Puget Sound, scientists report that hydrocarbon pollution from habitat concentrate in fish. There are higher cancer rates around New Orleans, where fresh fish and shellfish are a staple of the local cuisine. Fish with the highest and lowest mercury levels. The highest include tilefish, swordfish, mackerel, and shark, while the lowest include salmon, flounder, sole, tilapia, trout, and cod. Higher levels of mercury found in mothers who eat more fish have been associated with birth defects, seizures, mental retardation, developmental disabilities, and cerebral palsy. This is mostly the result of women having eaten fish when they were pregnant. Scientists believe that fetuses are much more sensitive to mercury exposure than are adults, although adults do suffer from varying degrees of brain damage from fish consumption. Even the FDA, which normally ignores reports on the dangers of our dangerous food practices, acknowledges that large fish, such as shark and swordfish, are potentially dangerous. Researchers are also concerned about other toxins concentrated in fish that can cause brain damage way before the cancers caused by chemical-carrying fish appear. Fish may also lower the effectiveness of our immune system. Those on high fish diets have lower blood markers of immune system function, representing a lowered defense against infection and cancer. Another problem with fish is that because fish oils inhibit blood clotting, they increase the likelihood that the delicate vessels in the brain can bleed, causing a hemorrhagic stroke. At the same time fish reduces the risk of heart attacks, it may be increasing the risk of a bleeding problem. Regular fish consumption of fish oil supplements should be avoided if a person has a family history or is at risk of hemorrhagic stroke or other bleeding disorders. The bottom line, choose fish and other animal products, but be aware that the place where it was caught and the type of fish matter. Don't accept recreational fish from questionable waters. Never eat high mercury content fish. Don't eat fish more than twice a week, and if you have a family history of hemorrhagic stroke, limit it further to only once a month. Extracted oils, one slick customer. Americans consume large quantities of oil, a refined food processed at high temperatures. When oils are subject to heat, the chemical structure of the essential fatty acids is changed to create toxic derivatives known as lipid peroxides and other toxic and potentially cancer-causing byproducts. Clearly, it is best to avoid fried foods and heated oils, not only because they will destroy your chances to achieve a normal weight, but also because they are potentially cancer-causing. Get your fats as nature packaged them. It is best to consume the small amount of fats we need in their original, unprocessed, unheated, and natural packages, whole foods. Ground flax seeds are healthier than flaxseed oil, as they contain valuable fiber, lignans, and other phytonutrients, and not just omega-3 fat. Raw sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, corn, and avocados are healthful, but their extracted oils may not be. Even cold-pressed oils are subject to the damaging effects of heat and contain lipid peroxides. So I usually recommend to my patients that instead of consuming the oils, they consume a tablespoon of ground flax seeds daily or some walnuts to ensure adequate omega-3 fat intake. Remember, when you extract the oil from the whole food it was packaged in, you remove it from its antioxidant and phytochemical-rich protective environment. You turn a moderate nutrient-to-calorie food into a low nutrient-to-calorie food, and at the same time damage the quality of the fat with heat. Romaine lettuce, kale, collards, and Swiss chard are rich in fiber, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, vegetable protein, and essential fats, another reason I consider leafy green vegetables the king of all foods. Your diet should not be fat-free. Indeed, it would be nearly impossible to make this diet fat-deficient because even green vegetables and beans contain beneficial fats. The focus should be on reducing, or removing, the harmful and processed fats and instead consuming the healthy fats that are naturally contained in whole natural foods. Non-processed fats contained in avocados, sunflower seeds, and almonds, to name just a few sources, can be healthy additions to a wholesome diet of natural foods. Even though these foods have lots of calories, they pack a significant nutritive punch. They are rich in vitamin E and other antioxidants and are not nutrient depleted the way the oil is when it is extracted, processed, and put in a bottle. Be aware, however, that unless you are physically very active and slim, you should watch the amount of these relatively fat-rich plant products, as they obviously could interfere with reaching your ideal weight. If you are slim and exercise regularly, you can consume 3 to 4 ounces of raw nuts or seeds daily, an avocado or a little olive oil. Growing children or an individual who is having difficulty gaining weight can eat a little more dietary fat, but it still should be mostly fat from the wholesome foods described above. When you are overweight, you have a good store of fat on your body, so you don't need to worry about not ingesting enough fat. You are not going to become fat deficient, even if your diet is low in fat. As you lose weight, you will actually be on a high-fat diet, as you will be utilizing the fat you have around your midsection for energy. The only concern is to maintain a healthy ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 fatty acids, so I advise ingesting 1 tablespoon of ground flax seeds every day, if possible. Many like to sprinkle it over fruit or add it to a salad. Is there an increased risk of stroke from low-fat diets? There is considerable evidence that while animal fats are definitely associated with an increase in heart disease, more fat may offer protection against hemorrhagic stroke. Of course, recent investigations have shown the strong protective effects of fruits and vegetables, but some data suggests that fat, even animal fat, offers some protection to the smaller intracerebral vessels that cause hemorrhagic strokes. There are two main types of strokes, ischemic and hemorrhagic. Almost all heart attacks and the vast majority of strokes are associated with ischemia, lack of blood flow, from blood clots. The small percentage of strokes that are hemorrhagic, approximately 8%, result not from a cholesterol-laden vessel leading to a clot, but from a rupture of a small artery in the brain as a result of years and years of high blood pressure. Some of these small, fragile blood vessels in the brain possibly become more resistant to rupture when they are more diseased with fat. It is entirely possible that in certain cases, the same diet that leads to abnormal clot formation and causes 99% of heart attacks and over 90% of strokes may help the small intracerebral vessels resist the tendency to rupture from years of uncontrolled hypertension that results from a high-salt diet. This is in no way a legitimate excuse to eat more animal products. It makes more sense to eat the healthful anti-heart attack diet and keep your blood pressure down by not consuming much added salt. The data is so confusing because many of the studies group all types of strokes together when they are in fact very different diseases with completely different causes. Considering ischemic or embolic strokes, the data from both human and rat studies illustrates the importance of adequate essential omega-3 fat intake, including an increased omega-3 to omega-6 ratio. These omega-3 fats are the same ones that protect against heart attacks, which are also of an ischemic nature. Keep in mind, saturated fat intake has consistently been associated with an increase in strokes in general because most strokes are of the ischemic or embolic variety. Finally, to make things even more confusing, some monounsaturated fat intake offers a degree of protection against strokes and does not have the cholesterol-raising and other negative effects of saturated fats. The studies showing the nutritional value of monounsaturated fats lend support to the Mediterranean diet and those advocating a diet rich in olive oil. Obviously, some omega-6 fat is still essential and necessary for normal disease resistance. My view is that thin individuals should consume more monounsaturated fats from wholesome high-fat vegetation, such as avocados, raw nuts, and seeds. Heavier people, because of their higher risk of heart disease, diabetes, and cancer, as well as the very limited occurrence of hemorrhagic stroke in the overweight, should limit their intake of these fats. Since heavier people have more stored fat on their body, they do not benefit from a higher intake of dietary fat the same way thin individuals do. As the overweight lose weight, they are already on a high-fat diet, consuming their stored body fat. Let me remind you that the best fats are the monounsaturated fats and essential fats, omega-3 and omega-6, present in whole natural plant foods, including avocados and raw nuts and seeds. Studies continue to show that consumption of raw nuts protects against both heart attack and stroke without the risks of increasing heart disease and cancer, as is the case with the high consumption of animal origin fats. When the fats you consume are from whole foods rather than oil, you gain nature's protective package, a balance of vitamins, minerals, fibers, and phytonutrients. Nuts and seeds protect against cardiovascular death. Raw nuts and seeds are packed with nutrients. Lignans, bioflavonoids, minerals, and other antioxidants protect the fragile freshness of the nut and seed fats, and plant proteins and plant sterols naturally lower cholesterol. Perhaps one of the most unexpected and novel findings in nutritional epidemiology in the past 5 years has been that nut and seed consumption offers such strong protection against heart disease. Several clinical studies have observed beneficial effects of diets high in nuts, including walnuts, peanuts, almonds, and other nuts, on blood lipids. A review of 23 intervention trials using nuts and seeds convincingly demonstrated that daily consumption decreases total cholesterol and LDL, or bad cholesterol. Not only do nuts and seeds lower LDL cholesterol, but they also raise HDL, or good cholesterol. Interestingly, they can help normalize a dangerous type of LDL molecule, the small, dense LDL particles that are damaging to blood vessels, particularly to the endothelial cells lining the blood vessels. When specifically compared with changes in known risk factors, such as lowering blood glucose or cholesterol levels, eating nuts and seeds has been found to decrease cardiovascular death and increase lifespan. To date, 5 large studies, the Adventist Health Study, the Iowa Women's Health Study, the Nurses' Health Study, the Physicians' Health Study, and the CARE Study, have examined the relationship between nut and seed consumption and the risk of atherosclerotic heart disease. All found a strong inverse association. Based on the data from the Nurses' Health Study, it was estimated that substituting the fat from 1 ounce of nuts for the equivalent energy from the carbohydrate in an average diet was associated with a 30% reduction in heart disease risk. The substitution of nut fat for saturated fat was associated with a 45% reduction in risk. The Physicians' Health Study added much more to the story. The most fascinating and perhaps most important finding is that nuts and seeds do not just lower cholesterol and protect against heart attacks. Components of nuts and seeds also seem to have anti-arrhythmic and anti-seizure effects that dramatically reduce the occurrence of sudden death. The Physicians' Health Study followed 21,454 male participants for an average of 17 years. Researchers found a lower risk of sudden cardiac death and other coronary heart disease endpoints after controlling for known cardiac risk factors and other dietary habits. When compared with men who rarely or never consumed seeds or nuts, those who consumed 2 or more servings per week reduced the risk of sudden cardiac death by about 50%. Sudden cardiac death is not a heart attack, but rather a life-threatening cardiac arrhythmia called ventricular fibrillation or ventricular tachycardia. People who have heart disease do not always die of a heart attack. They can die of an irregular heartbeat that prevents the heart from pumping properly. Eating seeds and nuts instead of oil for healthy weight loss. Epidemiologic studies indicate an inverse association between frequency of nut and seed consumption and body mass index. Interestingly, their consumption may actually suppress appetite and help people get rid of diabetes and lose weight. In other words, populations consuming more nuts and seeds are likely to be slim, and people consuming less seeds and nuts are more likely to be heavier. Well-controlled nut feeding trials, designed to see whether eating nuts and seeds resulted in weight gain, showed the opposite. Eating raw nuts and seeds promoted weight loss, not weight gain. Several studies have also shown that eating a small amount of nuts or seeds actually helps dieters feel satiated, stay with the program, and have more success achieving long-term weight loss. By contrast, refined oil, which contains 120 calories per tablespoon, is fattening and can sabotage weight loss. Plus, it does not have any protective effects on the heart. The secret here is to forego the oil and instead make salad dressings, dips, and sauces by blending in seeds and nuts. The healthiest diet for all ages is one that includes some healthy, fatty foods. This same diet will also prevent and reverse disease. Even for people who are overweight, I recommend 1 ounce of raw, unsalted seeds or nuts per day, such as sesame seeds, sunflower seed, flax seeds, pumpkin seeds, walnuts, pistachio nuts, or almonds. Trans fat, a wolf in sheep's clothing. Trans fats do not exist in nature. They are laboratory designed and have adverse health consequences. They interfere with the body's production of beneficial fatty acids and promote heart disease. As trans fatty acids offer no benefits and only clearly adverse metabolic consequences, when you see the words partially hydrogenated on the side of the box, consider what's inside poisonous and throw it in the trash. Trans fats are surely cancer-promoting and raise your cholesterol as much as saturated fat. Considering that they also reduce HDL, or good cholesterol, trans fats may be even more atherogenic than saturated fatty acids. Convincing evidence from the Nurses' Health Study and others indicates that trans fats are as closely associated with heart attacks as the fats in animal products. The amount of trans fats used in foods has significantly decreased in recent years. Many food manufacturers have reformulated their products to reduce or eliminate trans fats. Food manufacturers now must indicate trans fat content on their products' nutritional labels. Beware that levels of less than 0.5 grams per serving can be listed as 0 grams trans fat, making it possible for a person eating multiple servings of a food labeled free of trans fat to still consume a significant amount. The fatty conclusion. There is no question that a high-fat diet increases the risk of many cancers. This has been demonstrated in hundreds of animal and human studies. It's not only the amount of fat, but also the type of fat that is linked to increased risk, just like the type of protein. It gets complicated, so here are the main points. 1. Any extracted oil, fat, can promote cancer because consuming even the healthier fats, such as olive oil, in excess adds too many empty calories. Excess calories have toxic effects, contributing to obesity, premature aging, and cancer. 2. Excess omega-6 fatty acids promote cancer risk, while omega-3 fats, which are harder to come by, tend to lower risk. Omega-6 fats are found in polyunsaturated oils such as corn oil and safflower oil, whereas omega-3 fatty acids are abundant in seeds, greens, and some fish. 3. The most dangerous fats for both heart disease and cancer are saturated fats and trans fatty acids, listed as partially hydrogenated on food labels. You would be foolish not to avoid these fats. Trans fats may raise breast cancer risk by more than 45%. 4. Whole natural plant foods, including whole grains, greens, nuts, and seeds, supply adequate fat. Eating an assortment of natural foods will ensure that you are not deficient in fat. For those who require more DHA fats, flax seeds, hemp seeds, chia seeds, walnuts, and plant-derived DHA supplements are the healthiest and cleanest sources. Remember, a low-fat diet can be worse than a higher-fat diet if it has more saturated fat or trans fat and if it contains an excessive amount of refined carbohydrates. Note that lean meat or fowl, which contains 2 to 5 grams of fat per ounce, contains less fat, less saturated fat, and fewer calories per ounce than cheese, which has 8 to 9 grams of fat per ounce. Cheese has much more saturated fat, the most dangerous fat, about 10 times as much saturated fat as chicken breast. Cheese is the food that contributes the most saturated fat to the American diet. Most cheeses are more than 50% of calories from fat, and even low-fat cheeses are very high-fat foods. The accompanying chart lists the percentage of calories from total fat and the percentage of the total fat that is saturated fat for 9 commonly consumed cheeses. Cream cheese tops the list with a remarkable 89% of its calories coming from fat, and 63% of those calories being saturated fat. Even skim ricotta cheese at the bottom of the list is over 50% fat calories, and 62% of those are from saturated fat. To view the complete list, please visit drfurman.com/ETL graphics. Americans have this fetish with watching fat and forgetting everything else we know about nutrition. Fat is not everything. If the fats you consume are healthy fats, found in raw seeds, nuts, and avocados, and if your diet is rich in unrefined foods, you needn't worry so much about the fat, unless you are overweight. The take-home message regarding fat is this: avoid saturated fats and trans fats, hydrogenated fats, and try to include some foods that contain omega-3 fat in your diet. Giving up the myths about protein, like changing your religion. Remember those basic 4 food group charts we all saw in every classroom in elementary school? Protein had its own box, designated by a thick steak, a whole fish, and an entire chicken. Dairy foods had their own special box as well. A healthy diet, we were taught, supposedly centered on meat and milk. Protein was thought to be the most favorable of all nutrients, and lots of protein was thought to be the key to strength, health, and vigor. Unfortunately, cancer rates soared. As a result of scientific investigations into the causes of disease, we have had to rethink what we were taught. Old habits die hard. Most Americans still cling to what they were taught as children. There are very few subjects that are more distorted in modern culture than that of protein. Keep in mind that we do need protein. We can't be healthy without protein in our diet. Plant foods have plenty of protein. You do not have to be a nutritional scientist or dietitian to figure out what to eat, and you don't need to mix and match foods to achieve protein completeness. Any combination of natural foods will supply you with adequate protein, including all 8 essential amino acids, as well as non-essential amino acids. It is unnecessary to combine foods to achieve protein completeness at each meal. The body stores and releases the amino acids needed over a 24-hour period. About 1/6 of our daily protein utilization comes from recycling our own body tissue. This recycling, or digesting our own cells lining the digestive tract, evens out any variation from meal to meal in amino acid incompleteness. It requires no level of nutritional sophistication to get sufficient protein, even if you eat only plant foods. It is only when a vegetarian diet revolves around white bread and other processed foods that the protein content falls to low levels. However, the minute you include unprocessed foods, such as vegetables, whole grains, beans, or nuts, the diet becomes protein-rich. Green grass made the lion. Which has more protein? Oatmeal, ham, or a tomato? The answer is that they all have about the same amount of protein per calorie. The difference is the tomato and the oatmeal are packaged with fiber and other disease-fighting nutrients, and the ham is packaged with cholesterol and saturated fat. Some people believe that only animal products contain all the essential amino acids and that plant proteins are incomplete. False. They were taught that animal protein is superior to plant protein. False. They accept the outdated notion that plant protein must be mixed and matched in some complicated way that takes the planning of a nuclear physicist for a vegetarian diet to be adequate. False. I guess they never thought too hard about how a rhinoceros, a hippopotamus, gorilla, giraffe, or elephant became so big eating only vegetables. Animals do not make amino acids from thin air. All the amino acids originally came from plants. Even the non-essential amino acids that are fabricated by the body are just the basic amino acids that are modified slightly in some way by the body. So the lion's muscles can be composed of only the protein precursors and amino acids that the zebra and the gazelle ate. Green grass made the lion. I see 20 to 30 new patients per week, and I always ask them, which has more protein, 100 calories of sirloin steak or 100 calories of broccoli? When I tell them it's broccoli, the most frequent response I get is, I didn't know broccoli had protein in it. I then ask, so where did you think the calories in broccoli came from? Did you think it was mostly fat, like an avocado, or mostly carbohydrate, like a potato? People know less about nutrition than any other subject. Even the physicians and dietitians who attend my lectures quickly answer, steak. They are surprised to learn that broccoli has about twice as much protein as steak. When you eat large quantities of green vegetables, you receive a considerable amount of protein. Remember, one 10-ounce box of frozen broccoli contains more than 10 grams of protein. The accompanying chart shows a percentage of protein contained in 14 commonly consumed foods, including yogurt, pasta, meatloaf, tofu, broccoli, and various plant foods. Once again, we see that green vegetables have the highest percentage of protein per calories of any other food. In fact, both broccoli and spinach have about twice the amount of protein per calorie than a Burger King cheeseburger or meatloaf. Please review the complete list at drfurman.com/ETL graphics. How much protein do we need? Over the years, the amount of protein recommended by authorities has gone up and down like a yo-yo. It wasn't until nitrogen balance studies became available that we could actually measure protein requirements. Today, the recommended daily allowance, RDA, is 0.8 milligrams per kilogram body weight, or about 44 grams for a 120-pound woman and 55 grams for a 150-pound man. This is a recommended amount, not a minimum requirement. The assumption is that about 0.5 milligrams per kilogram is needed, and then a large safety factor was built into the RDA to almost double the minimum requirement determined by nitrogen balance studies. Still, the average American consumes over 100 grams of protein daily, an unhealthy amount. Only 10% of the total calories consumed by the average person needs to be in the form of protein. In fact, as little as 2.5% of calories from protein may be all that is necessary for the average person. Regardless of the many opinions on adequate or optimal protein intake, most plant foods, except fruit, supply at least 10% of calories from protein, with green vegetables averaging about 50%. High-nutrient diets that are plant food predominant, like the one I recommend, supply approximately 40 to 70 grams of protein daily, in the range of 1,200 to 1,800 calories per day. That is plenty of protein. Furthermore, the outdated notion of high biological value protein is based on essential amino acid profiles that grant eggs a 100% score based on the nutritional needs of rodents. It should not be surprising that the growth needs of rats are not quite the same as those of humans. For example, birds and rats have high requirements for methionine and cysteine, the sulfur-containing amino acids. The sulfur-containing amino acids are important when growing feathers and fur. More recently, the essential amino acid profiles have been updated to reflect more closely the needs of humans. Human breast milk, for example, is lacking if we are considering the nutritional requirements of baby rats, but ideal when looking at human requirements. Today, protein scores are computed differently from in the past. They are based on human needs, not rats, and soy protein earns a higher score than beef protein. Using a computer dietary analysis program, I tried to compose a natural foods diet deficient in any required amino acid. It was impossible. Almost any assortment of plant foods contained about 30 to 40 grams of protein per 1,000 calories. When your caloric needs are met, your protein needs are met automatically. Focus on eating healthy natural foods. Forget about trying to get enough protein. What about the athlete, weightlifter, or pregnant woman? Don't they need more protein? Of course, an athlete in heavy training needs more protein. I was on the U.S. world figure skating team in the early 1970s. I often exercised more than 5 hours daily. Besides all the grueling work on the ice, I did plenty of weightlifting and running. With all that exercise, I needed more protein, but I needed lots more of everything, especially calories. When you take in more food, you get the extra protein, extra fat, extra carbohydrates, and extra nutrients that you need. I loaded up the back seat of the car with huge amounts of fruits, vegetables, raw nuts, and whole grains. I ate lots of food and took in more protein and everything else in the process. Your protein needs increase in direct proportion to your increased caloric demands and your increased appetite. Guess what? You automatically get enough. The same is true during pregnancy. When you meet your caloric needs with an assortment of natural plant foods, you will receive the right amount of protein, not too much, not too little. Putting the RDAs into perspective. The RDAs are levels set by our government for various nutrients considered to be desirable for good health. But are they correct? Are these levels appropriate, and will even higher levels of certain nutrients benefit us? Difficult questions to answer, but first we must consider how the RDAs were derived. The RDAs were first developed when the government began questioning the nutritional value of military rations distributed to our soldiers during World War II. Later, our government's Food and Nutrition Board looked at the foods they expected most people to eat. By analyzing the average diet, they came up with a suggested minimum and then added an upward adjustment to theoretically ensure optimal health. The RDAs are biased in favor of the conventional level of intake. They are not based on how people should eat to maintain optimal health. Rather, they have been formulated to represent how we do eat. They characterize the conventional diet, high in animal products, lots of dairy products and fat, and low in fiber, antioxidants, and other nutrients, such as vitamin C, that are rich in plant foods. The RDAs reflect a diet that caused all the problems in the first place. So we see a tendency to keep RDAs for plant-based nutrients low while keeping RDAs for animal-based nutrients high. Take, for example, the most ridiculous recommendation from the RDA, that for vitamin C. Any diet utilizing an abundance of unrefined natural plant foods offers a significant amount of vitamin C. The diets I recommend and consume myself contain between 500 and 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C each day, just from food. If you consumed a diet only half as good as I recommend, you would still consume between 250 and 500 milligrams of vitamin C each day. The RDA of 60 merely reflects the inadequacy of the American diet and how impossible it would be to get enough vitamin C if you ate a diet so low in natural plant foods. You can take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C in the form of a pill to make up for how deadly deficient your diet is, but then you would be missing all the other plant-derived antioxidants and phytochemicals that come in the same package as the vitamin C. The government must hold the RDA ridiculously low because it would be inconsistent with the other absurd dietary suggestions and make it impossible to achieve such levels without supplementation. Most of the dietary recommendations from our government have been discarded and updated over time. Such recommendations, such as the Basic Four Food Group Guide, have always been at least 10 years behind current science and strongly influenced by food manufacturers. The current RDAs should meet the same fate. They are based on outmoded nutritional opinions that do not stand up to scientific scrutiny. Last and most important is that thousands of phytonutrients lack RDAs. There are subtle nuances and nutritive interactions that create disease resistance from the synergy of diverse substances in natural foods. Like a symphony orchestra whose members play in perfect harmony, our body depends on the harmonious interaction of nutrients, both known and unknown. By supplying a rich assortment of natural foods, we best maximize the function of the human masterpiece. Remember the two main messages of this chapter. First, when food is refined and the macronutrients are removed from nature's natural packaging, they assume disease-causing properties. Second, green vegetables ran away with the title and legumes and fresh fruits took home a distant silver and bronze in the Nutrient Density Olympics. Chapter 6. Breaking Free of Food Addiction. Case Study. Isabel lost 80 pounds and has kept it off for over 4 years. Quote, "Every once in a while I feel amazed. I was so depressed and felt so hopeless the day that I ordered Eat to Live. Now it's like, wow, I'm doing this and I love it. I was tired, unhappy, and mad at myself for continuously failing to lose weight and keep it off. I was 31 and had had weight issues for as long as I could remember. I'm only 5 feet tall but weighed 203 pounds. My back hurt, I had migraine headaches and acne, and I was a couch potato. I dreaded dressing up to go anywhere because I didn't have anything pretty to wear and didn't want anyone to see me obese. I would have locked myself in my house if I could have. I was tired of the stares and people making fun of me. I was always the big girl, and there always seemed to be someone around to remind me of it. I tried so many different diets, but nothing ever stuck. I read the book and was impressed by Dr. Furman's scientific research and knowledge, plus everything made a lot of sense. I started to follow his nutritional guidelines right away, and by that summer I had lost 50 pounds. Things really clicked when I stopped focusing on numbers. I stopped setting weight goals and freaking out if I didn't lose weight fast enough. I trusted that each day I ate according to the Eat to Live guidelines, I was getting healthier, and I let my body do its thing. My current weight loss is now 80 pounds, and my overall body fat has been reduced from 47% to 25%. I feel fantastic, and my blood tests are great. I look younger. Actually, some people don't even recognize me. I feel like a new woman. I rarely get migraines now. I have fewer lower back issues. I am no longer an emotional eater. I have less leg pain due to a pesky varicose vein that threatened to pop out. My skin is cleared up, and I have better mental clarity. My self-esteem and self-confidence have improved. I now have energy to be active. I can do things that I had absolutely no desire to try before. I became a certified personal trainer because now that I feel great, I want to help others feel better. Eat to Live really does work. If anyone is struggling or contemplating, just go for it. Do as much as you can and never give up. Here are my tips for success. Forget the scales and deadlines. Get into a routine. Get regular exercise. Join the member center at drfurman.com for support. Don't be afraid to say no at social gatherings. Your health should come before pleasing others. End quote. An important discovery. Hunger is an experience that many people fear. It seems absurd that fear of starvation could exist in the most overfed population in human history. However, our obsession with food and eating is undeniable. People often react with abject fear when contemplating going without food for even short periods of time. Continuous eating not only undermines healthy weight loss, it is just plain unhealthful. Eating the wrong, low-nutrient foods leads to what I call toxic hunger and the desire to overconsume calories. When we do not meet our micronutrient needs, we do not feel well unless our digestive tract is continuously at work. Toxic hunger overrides the natural instinct that controls appetite and leads to a dramatic increase in calorie consumption. I have observed that a diet style sufficiently high in micronutrients can decrease sensations leading to food cravings and overeating behaviors. The sensations commonly and traditionally considered to be hunger, and even reported in medical textbooks as such, disappear for the majority of individuals after eating this micronutrient-rich diet. A new sensation, which I call true hunger, arises instead. Understanding the science and human physiology behind this important distinction is important. Everybody you know is a food addict. When our bodies have become acclimated to a noxious or toxic agent, it is called addiction. Indulging in the addiction is mildly pleasurable, but if we stop taking the substance, such as nicotine or caffeine, we feel ill as the body mobilizes cellular waste and attempts to repair the damage caused by the exposure. This is called withdrawal. If you drank 4 cups of coffee or caffeinated soda every day, you would get a withdrawal headache when you tried to stop the habit. To feel better, you could take more caffeine or other drugs, or eat food more frequently, which would help because eating and digesting retards detoxification or withdrawal. Similarly, toxic hunger is heightened by the consumption of caffeinated beverages, soft drinks, and processed foods. It occurs predominantly after digestion ceases and the digestive tract is empty, and it can make a person feel extremely uncomfortable if he or she does not eat or drink a caloric load to inhibit detoxification for relief. Symptoms of toxic hunger: headaches, fatigue, nausea, weakness, mental confusion and irritability, abdominal and esophageal spasm, fluttering and cramping in the stomach. The confusion is compounded because when we eat the same heavy or unhealthful foods that are causing the problem to begin with, we feel better while the detoxification process is halted or delayed. This makes becoming overweight inevitable, because if we stop digesting food, even for a short time, our bodies will begin to experience symptoms of detoxification or withdrawal from our unhealthful diet. To counter this, we eat heavy meals that require a long period of digestion, or we eat too often and keep our digestive tract busy and overfed almost all the time to lessen the discomfort from our stressful diet style. In the anabolic phase, we digest and store the calories for future use. In the catabolic phase, we burn the stored calories. Our body cycles between periods of digestion, assimilation, anabolic phase, and utilization of the stored calories, catabolic phase, which begins when the digestive process ends. During the anabolic phase, the absorbed glucose is stored in the liver and muscle tissues as glycogen to be broken down and utilized at a later time when we are not eating and digesting. During the catabolic phase, we live off the nutrients stored in the anabolic phase. The breakdown of stored glycogen is called glycolysis, and it is during this process that our body swings into heightened detoxification activity. When we are breaking down our body fats and glycogen stores, the body is exposed to more released cellular toxins, and elimination and detoxification are increased accordingly. This elimination of toxins can cause discomfort, especially when our tissues have an excessive toxic burden. These uncomfortable symptoms are not caused by lower blood sugar, though the symptoms occur in parallel with low blood sugar. When our diet is low in phytochemicals and other micronutrients, we build up more intracellular waste products. It is well accepted in the scientific literature that toxins such as free radicals, advanced glycation end products, AGEs, and lipid A2E build up in human tissues with diets low in antioxidants and other micronutrients, and that these substances contribute to disease. It has been noted that overweight individuals developed more oxidative stress as a result of free radical damage when fed a low micronutrient-containing meal compared to normal weight individuals. Increased peroxidases and aldehydes derived from damaged lipids and proteins were measurable in the urine. This indicates that people prone to obesity experience more withdrawal symptoms, directing them to overconsume calories. It is a vicious cycle that both promotes the problem and prevents its resolution. Subjects fed healthier diets did not build up these inflammatory markers. When we consume excess animal proteins, which create excess nitrogenous wastes, and don't eat sufficient phytochemical-rich vegetation, we exacerbate the buildup of metabolic waste products in our body. As the hours go by and we have not eaten, glycogen stores are utilized for energy, glycolysis. Glycolysis occurs after digestion ceases and is a perfectly comfortable state not accompanied by symptoms in a healthy individual eating a healthy diet. As we continue to burn off the glycogen stores, true hunger eventually kicks in, signaling the need for calories before gluconeogenesis begins. Gluconeogenesis is the breakdown of muscle tissue that occurs to supply the body with glucose when there is no glycogen left. The body cannot make the glucose it needs to fuel the brain from stored fats, but it can make glucose from amino acids derived from muscle tissue. True hunger is protective of our muscle mass and gives us a clear signal to eat before gluconeogenesis begins. True hunger or toxic hunger? What I have observed and quantified with thousands of individuals is that the drive to overconsume calories is blunted by high micronutrient consumption. The symptoms that were thought to be hypoglycemia or even hunger, which occur as soon as glycolysis begins, simply disappear after eating very healthfully for a few months. After that 2 to 4 month window, when micronutrients in the body's tissues have accumulated, the symptoms of fatigue, headaches, irritability, and stomach cramps go away, and people get back in touch with true hunger, felt primarily in the throat. True hunger makes eating more pleasurable, and this sensation better directs us to a more appropriate amount of calories for our body's biological needs. In our present toxic food environment, many have lost the ability to connect with the body signals that tell us how much food we actually need. Nature has given our bodies the beautifully orchestrated ability to signal precisely how much to eat to maintain an ideal weight for long-term health. I have documented this process, demonstrating that this otherwise poorly studied phenomenon is real. It has resulted in thousands of people losing dramatically large amounts of weight. Hundreds have lost more than 100 pounds, some more than 300 pounds, without surgical interventions and with lasting success. Healthful eating is more effective than portion control for long-term weight control. It modifies and diminishes the sensations of toxic hunger, enabling overweight individuals to be more comfortable eating fewer calories. True hunger signals when our bodies